WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Hello, and welcome to WrestleSpective Radio at FairToFlare.com. I'm Jason Mann, and with me today is Seth Roy of WrestleSpective. Seth, how you doing?
I am doing great.
Good to hear. And today we are talking about, continuing our series on the final matches of WrestleMania, and today is WrestleMania 15. So we're past the halfway point, and we are talking about the first match in a very influential series, both in WrestleMania history and in WWE history. And you've written about this before, the Stone Cold Steve Austin against The Rock. So what do you kind of remember about the setup for this match?
I remember obviously at the time, Stone Cold and Rock were Stone Cold was already sort of the biggest and most popular, wrestler in the WWF. And by this point, probably 99, the WWF was about as popular as it would get. I just remember it really being sort of a clash of the top two guys in the company at the time. Sort of like a couple years ago, a good clash between John Cena and Batista was at SummerSlam, only probably five times as big. I remember, a lot of excitement at the time.
Yeah. I mean, there was definitely a big buzz. I mean, they'd been built, of course, they'd feuded in late 97 over the Intercontinental title, but that was, basically a lifetime ago at this point. But they'd, had a pretty memorable dealing there, as Austin was, right moving to the top and Rock was still a few tiers below him. But at this point, Rock was still below him, but it was much closer to equal, and they were both, gigantic. Kind of the beginning of the setup was, through 98, Austin was the top guy. Rock was a rising guy as a heel. And he'd had a big feud with Triple H and DX, with The Nation. And at SummerSlam 98, the Triple H and Rock had a big ladder match, pretty classic ladder match at Madison Square Garden, which The Rock lost. But he just through his performance in the match, he just got, was clearly the next star, that WWE was going to have. And they, pretty quickly took advantage of it. They turned him babyface and, did a pretty cool build with, him rising up. And through various machinations, Austin was stripped of the WWE title. And they had a tournament at the Survivor Series 98 that, and Austin was one of the favorites, but Rock was another one of the favorites in Mankind as well. And in the end, Rock ended up winning the tournament, but he actually basically did it by turning heel. It was one of the very first recreations of the Montreal Screwjob. Vince McMahon was at ringside and told the ring announcer to ring the effing bell, and Rock had Mankind in the sharpshooter, and then ended up sort of winning the title at that point. And then, of course, Mankind and Rock kind of traded it back and forth. This kind of was sort of the start of the time where they were really bouncing the title around a lot, which, at the time, it didn't, short term, it was, it was good and exciting, although I think there was some long term negativity to that. But, Mankind ended up winning his first title, then Rock kind of won it back again. And then I think Mankind won it again at the halftime heat for the Super Bowl. And then Rock finally won it like a month before this. So Rock was a three-time champion at this point, and then Austin was kind of going for his third belt. So they were already kind of doing the thing where, the guys were having a lot more title reigns than they'd had before.
Right. And I remember right, Stone Cold would have won the Rumble this year.
Actually, no. It was Vince McMahon who won the Rumble.
That's right.
In the,
and he withdrew, and then he withdrew his Rumble winning or whatever.
Yeah.
And Stone Cold was the second place person.
Yeah, I forget exactly how that went down, but it ended up, the Royal Rumble itself was pretty much, it was the worst Royal Rumble ever, and it made Austin look completely stupid at the end, where he was distracted by Rock, you know, who was standing at, you know, at ringside, and then, you know, McMahon was able to dump him over the top rope, and they were 1 and 2, and then they were the last two men as well, and basically they both spent 80-90% of the match outside of the ring, or, you know, like Vince spent a lot of time on commentary. I think Austin was even like, you know, ambulance and then came back. It was, I don't know, it was just wacky and dumb. And they basically just kind of flouted the tradition of the Royal Rumble, kind of the whole narrative of convenience thing that, you know, where, you know, they just kind of bend the rules to the storyline rather than making the storyline fit kind of the, you know, the rules that have been previously established.
Was this the year of the Valentine's Day Massacre match between Austin and McMahon?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how Austin officially got his title shot at Mania.
Yeah, I think he won. Yeah, he had to win that match. Or, I mean, that was definitely the lead up to whether he had to win it or not. I mean, he did win it, and then you know, was given the title shot.
Right.
So yeah, that was. I mean, those are basically kind of the whole build up at that point. You know. You know, it was very exciting. Yeah, I mean, they reached really their peak. I mean, they'd surpassed WCW, and they, you know, were just, you know, and you get the kind of you really do feel the electricity on the show when watching the main event. And really, I mean, it was not a strong WrestleMania. In fact, it's kind of one of the worst ones, I think. But I mean, the crowd just is pretty insane for all of it. And, anything else to talk about as far as the build-up goes?
I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah. One thing. Before the match, they have a segment with Vince McMahon comes out and basically says that he's going to be. I think he wants to be the referee for the match. And there were various shenanigans before involving Mankind and Big Show that we don't need to get into. But it was basically they were fighting for who was going to be the referee of the match. And Shawn Michaels comes out and says, no, in fact, you can't be. In fact, none of the corporations allowed to be there. Michaels was the commissioner at the time. So basically, Vince goes away, and then Rock and Austin both come out, and they start the match. So they get into it right away. And in fact, one thing I kind of liked in the beginning is, of course, Rock enters first, and then Austin does his entrance, and then, you know, he always did the thing where he would go to the four different corners and, you know, stand up, and then he would, you know, kind of pass through the middle, and there would sometimes be a guy standing there, and the guy would have to get out of the way, or they would kind of give each other like a glance. But in this case, like Rock, like basically just got into his face and talked trash. It was kind of one of the things where, you know, most guys didn't stand up to Austin like that, you know, but Rock did. And I thought that was kind of cool. Or, you know, it was like, it showed like a sense of brashness that, you know, a lot of other guys didn't have. And in fact, they pretty much get into it right away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as far as the action goes, I mean, it's pretty much, you know, they spent a lot of time outside, and Rock is, you know, choking Austin with his shirt, and in fact, this is, you know, they even say this is a no DQ match, and that was made by Vince, and I believe this may have been the first no disqualification match, final match in WrestleMania history, or WWE title match, and that became very much a pay-per-view staple. I mean, pretty much every main event would be no DQ for a few years, or, you know, if it wasn't explicitly said, I mean, you know, they acted as if there were no DQs or no countouts based on, you know, they would go do a lot of outside brawling. There would, you know, they bring in weapons pretty much at random, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, it was very, you know, this was the thick of the, you know, the brawling style, the, you know, kind of, you know, setting up table spots outside and you know, doing that kind of thing. And why don't you talk a little bit about the big table spots in this match?
Well, it's sort of well, before you get to the table spots is when you have the fighting through the crowd we talked about, and then they go up the ramp toward the sign where they have a couple big bumps. You have the Rock does the vertical suplex that sends Stone Cold's leg into the I don't know what you call those things, light fixtures.
Yeah, like a lighting structure. Yeah, it kind of. Yeah, there was like a spinning things like on a platform. You know, they were kind of spinning lights, and yeah, it's yeah, that looked like it could have hurt. I mean, he just kind of grazed it really, and it just kind of spun around, but it hit his knee brace, which you know obviously was the concern.
Right, and that you know really sort of set up a lot of the rest of the match as far as what The Rock would do, and then. The Stone Cold reverses an Irish whip into the and sends The Rock into the big WrestleMania 15 sign. It's sort of one of the trademark spots that I remember.
Yeah, and that thing was huge too. I mean, it was you know it basically wrestle on top and then Mania on bottom. I think it may have had the X5 thing behind it as well. Yeah, it was a big display, and it was like, and it wasn't like solid. I mean, it was, it you know, kind of moved back and forth. Like, you know, when Rock hits it, it kind of fall. You know, it's, you know, it's hanging there essentially. It's not like on a, you know, fixed structure. So, yeah.
Then they walk back toward the ring, and they have a spot where Rock suplexes Stone Cold. And his back hits right on the concrete, which I don't think they really do a whole lot anymore.
Yeah, they don't have concrete either. I mean, usually everything's on pads now. I mean, even the entranceway. I was like, oh wow, concrete. I wouldn't, you know, at that point, I would never have expected that. So,
And then they go back around the ring and do the spot on the Spanish announcer's table, where Stone Cold sets Rock on the table and then gets up on the barrier and jumps off onto him, and it doesn't break the first time. So he just gets back up and jumps on him again, and it breaks. So I think it almost made it more memorable that it didn't break the first time.
Yeah, because he had to go through the effort of, you know, doing it again, and you know, yeah, it was kind of it worked out better than the original plan probably did, you know. And that, of course, came right after Rock had spit water in his face, and then after Austin broke the table a second time, he grabbed water and spit it back in his face. So that was pretty cool.
And I guess sort of after that, they start to build toward the climax a little bit. Rock hits rock bottom for the first time.
Yeah, kind of out of nowhere too. Like, it's weird because the replays keep like they keep trying to show replays, and you know, and they usually obviously time them during, you know, really slow spots, but they kept mistiming it, and it was it was like you didn't really see what happened, and then suddenly, you know, Rock like hit like a rock bottom out of nowhere, and you caught half of it, and then it, you know, only got two. So like I don't know, the camera work. It very much fits the stereotype I have of 1999 of the, you know, the crash TV, the, you know, the ADD, you know, kind of Vince Russo style of, you know, something incredible has to be happening at every single moment or people aren't going to be paying attention kind of thing, you know.
Right.
So, and I don't know if that was, if they do more replays then than they do now. It seems like it, but I don't know that for sure. I just think that, you know, maybe not, but it's interesting to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely it's definitely different than compared to now, I would say.
Yeah.
So the rock bottom, which obviously some Cole kicks out of, and JR says it was the first time anybody had ever kicked out of the rock bottom. So if that was true, I guess, you know, obviously a pretty big deal.
I don't think it was true though.
Yeah, I didn't figure.
Yeah.
And then Rock brings in a chair, and this is where we get the first ref bump. Stone Cold hits, I forget what the first ref was, who the first ref was.
Yeah, I forget too. Tim White was the second ref. I know that.
Yeah, Tim White was second, and Hebner was third.
Yeah. Might have been Kyoto.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah, I think it was Kyoto. Yeah.
So Stone Cold hit him pretty square in the head when Rock pulled him over.
Yeah, and then next I thought was interesting is Rock gets a swinging neck breaker, and then he grabs the chair and then nails Austin repeatedly on the ground. And it felt a lot like the later in WrestleMania 17 where Austin grabbed the chair and kept nailing Rock repeatedly on the ground. You know, it's the, kind of the climax mm-hmm. of his heel turn.
Yeah. Yeah. And then... Rock hits him with the chair, and then Stone Cold kicks out again. And then, I guess, you know, talking again about sort of future matches, there's a lot of times here where Rock has Stone Cold down, either through the rock bottom or the chair shot. That there's at least, I want to say, at least maybe four near falls that the Rock almost wins. And that's sort of a running throughout the their trio of matches at WrestleMania, where Rock just can't beat Stone Cold. You know, he'll kick out of everything until in the WrestleMania 19 match when at the end of the match, Rock hits three rock bottoms in a row and finally, you know, gets his win.
Yeah, yeah, and all. I mean, even in the second one, I mean, they both. It's very much both of them trying to beat each other, and then kind of Austin's frustration is that he hits a big move on Rock, and then Rock kicks out, and then that's kind of what leads to all those chair shots. So there's definitely elements of of that with both guys through their series of matches.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, they sort of work. They kind of slow it down a little bit with some chin locks, and Austin kind of fighting out of it. Then he runs into a hard clothesline, and then another chin lock that Austin fights out of. But then he runs into a Samoan drop for two. At that point, Rock gets mad apparently at the referee. This is kind of weird and random, but he decides to hit the ref with the rock bottom. I'm always confused when wrestlers do that. You know, like without like. I mean, it kind of makes sense if like you know the you feel. Like if the ref like obviously like screwed something up, but I guess Rock's a heel, so it doesn't need to make sense. But
right.
it that always sort of baffles me whenever that happens. But then Rock runs into the stunner, and then the Earl Hebner ends up running in late, and then it only gets two. And at that point, you know, you kind of see Vince come out and he taunts Austin and grabs a chair, but Austin ends up getting a or I'm sorry, I think actually Austin gets the chair, but then Rock gets a low blow on him. And then they kind of both Vince and Rock end up teaming up on Rock and laying out Hebner. So basically doing a double stomp. So this is when Mankind runs out, and I guess he'd been hospitalized earlier, and then he punches out Vince, weirdly, Austin ends up getting like a cradle for two, and then Mankind, of course, counts that. That would have been an interesting little finish if they had done that. That just seems like a random thing to have in this type of match. Like this has been like an all out like drag out brawl essentially, and then that's like I don't know, like feels like a near fall kind of thing on like a Flair Steamboat, like technical classic kind of thing. I don't know. It was
right.
It was cool, but it was weird, definitely weird and random. And then Austin gets the Fez press and then the elbow drop, but Rock is able to come back, I think, and then hits another rock bottom and sits at the people's elbow and looks like he's about to hit it, but misses. Austin timed it very well to get out of it the exact precise moment. You know, sometimes guys will get out a little early on that, but Austin's timing was perfect. And then they end up sort of doing the, you know, Austin teases the stunner, then Rock teases the rock bottom, and then Austin, you know, gets the stunner the other time, kind of harkening back to the WrestleMania 14 finish with Austin and Michaels, you know, doing the stunner, super kick, stunner, you know, teased type of thing. And then Austin, you know, obviously hits the stunner and then gets the three count to win. So
is Rock the only person who takes the stunner the way he takes the stunner?
As far as sort of like kind of like bouncing backward on it and kind
of on his head.
Yeah. And then he kind of like, he's a couple times he's like even like completely like flipped over and then like his legs will hit the ropes and he kind of like falls back. Like, yeah. I don't know if I've ever seen anybody else take it like that. Maybe, you know, other guys, it's definitely, you know, it's definitely a different way of taking it. I mean, most guys just kind of basically, yeah, they'll drop forward and then they'll fall backward. Shane would, McMahon would take it pretty, like, very animatedly, you know, and it was similar maybe, but not quite the same. So, but it was very good. I also enjoyed Vince's look of like being incredibly distraught here was was good. You know, it was very, you know, he definitely had the look of a beaten man, you know, so to speak. So.
Well, if you think sort of while the in-ring rivalry with Stone Cold and Rock, really the overall rivalry of the Attitude Era was Stone Cold and Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
You know, obviously had the perfect mannerisms, and Vince had the perfect reaction here.
Yeah. No question. One thing in the aftermath of the match that confuses me is, you know, Austin celebrates and raises his hand and all that, does the beer thing, and then he's about to leave, but then he goes back in, and then he drinks a beer with Hebner. And I don't know, Hebner's kind of the geek referee. Like, I know they kind of made Hebner into kind of like a cult guy, you know, just after, you know, kind of during this time, but it always seemed to me like that Austin and Mankind should kind of be celebrating together since they, you know, were the two primary guys who had battled, you know, Vince and Rock, and, you know, they finally, you know, both, I mean, you know, Mankind didn't get his personal vindication, but he was able to help, and he was kind of, you know, like Austin was, you know, number one guy, and, you know, Mankind was like 1A or number two or whatever. I mean, it was kind of both their fight in a way, and they both had won. It was just weird. I mean, I think Mankind raised his hand, but beyond that, like, he wasn't, you know, I don't know, it just seemed weird that he wasn't part of the celebration. I don't know if that was a conscious, I mean, obviously it was a conscious decision, but I don't know why they wouldn't think to include him in that. It just kind of made more sense.
Yeah, I guess I didn't really think about it, but yeah, it is kind of funny.
I mean, it wasn't like it was bad. It just seemed like a strange decision. But and then yeah, basically after a while, Vince, you know, kind of comes to and then berates him outside, and then Austin punches him and then throws him in and gives him the stunner in the ring and then pours beer on him, and that's pretty much the gist of it. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do, like, my memory of this match was not particularly fantastic, but I really do think it had like an intensity, and it, you know, and just the brawling style, I think, like, has aged better because we're not nearly as accustomed to that style now. Like, this very much, like, these type of matches were very much becoming kind of the cliche style of the time of always doing the heavy brawling, and I don't know, and this felt very, you know, like kind of run of the mill at the time, but it feels different now, and I you know, that I think that made it more interesting for me.
Mm-hmm. Some of the glasses, I guess, that I view the match through, when it first aired, I was 13. And if this was when I, you know, probably was as big of a fan as I was when I was, you know, during my first run as a wrestling fan.
Mm-hmm.
So I was pretty excited about the show at the time, and also didn't think about things like work rate or whether things made sense or anything. I just liked watching Stone Cold and Rock beat up each other. And then another thing, couple years ago, Legends of WrestleMania came out for PlayStation and Xbox, and it had some key matches from each of the first 15 WrestleManias, including this one. They played, and you did the high spot sort of that we talked about, the Irish whip that took a sign, a little bit of crowd fighting, and the Spanish announcer table spot. So really from playing that and from this being one of my earlier, good wrestling memories, it's just really sort of been a match that's stayed fresh in my mind, a lot. The crowd brawling parts are a little bit, when you can't really see what's going on or anything, it's, kind of slow, but like you said, toward the end, the intensity and everything really picking up, I don't know if I'd call it one of my favorite matches or anything, but I definitely enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, it's not the best of the three Rock Austin matches or the best of, their series or anything like that, but it's, it's worthy. It's a worthy inclusion in that series. It's, not just because it's a final match at WrestleMania, but because, like, of the merits of the match itself. And it's obviously, very much a reflection of its time, and it, makes me think, like 4 years later they had the WrestleMania 19 match, which wasn't the final match, but was one of the key matches on that show. And it was, it's interesting to think like it, that 2003 match also kind of reflected how the style had evolved. And it was much more, it was a little slower, a little more methodical. I mean, obviously that was Austin's last match and he'd had some health issues. So, that was probably intentional, but it was very much more, a little more wrestling based. And it also was they did a lot of the big move, one guy will hit a big move, they'll lie there for a little while and come to, and then the other guy will hit a big move and they'll sell it for a while. That style, I think it's sort of a Japan influenced style in some respects, of kind of like centering it around around the finishers and then kicking out of the finishers and kind of building some of the drama that way. And of course that's still a style that's prevalent in some respects today. I mean, a lot of main event matches also will include, things like that. So it's just interesting to see how they can have like two very different matches 4 years apart, on similar stages, that really, reflected, kind of, the evolution of the style.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Any other thoughts as far as this match goes?
I don't think so. Covered it pretty well.
Yeah, for me, I mean, this was, I was definitely, I'd been really watching seriously for a couple years, and I was a little disaffected by WWE at this point. It just kind of was becoming more silly and less wrestling based, and kind of the excesses of the Attitude and Vince Russo's era were kind of coming along, and it was quite frankly getting sleazy too. And WCW, wasn't much fun to watch either. So I was still watching pretty regularly for another couple of years, but it was like I had lost my passion for it a little bit, to kind of during that time. So it's interesting to kind of look back and to give it, a look, 12 years later, and really was I on point with it, or was I off base or somewhere in between? And obviously it depends on the general circumstances, but for this one, yeah, like I said, I was pleasantly surprised. I enjoyed it. It was, a lot of fun, and definitely a very great match. So, Seth, appreciate you talking about the match with me, and let's see, if you want to check us out, of course, you can check us out at fairtoflare.com and wrestlespective.com, and the shows will be posted every day, 26 podcasts for 26 WrestleManias in 26 days. So we're counting down to the big show. And so thanks, everyone, for listening, and keep checking out for more shows.